let's get agreement that this is a strategic priority.
That area of alignment and synergy can be very important.
In the future, we're committed to expand value-based care.
Time. There's still progress that needs to be made.
This is Healthcare Strategies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Healthcare Strategies. My name is Veronica Salib, and I'm the Associate Site Editor for Life Sciences Intelligence and Pharma News Intelligence. We're here today with Dr. Hillary Hatch, a clinical psychologist and chief clinical officer at Phreesia, where she helps provider organizations implement tools to close care gaps. At the height of the pandemic, Dr. Hatch collaborated with other researchers on an article for the New England Journal of Medicine that focused on overcoming COVID-19 vaccine hesitancy. Today, Dr. Hatch is here to talk to healthcare strategies about the evolution of vaccine hesitancy and strategies for addressing the issue. Dr. Hatch, welcome, and thank you so much for being a guest on this episode.
Thank you, Veronica, and thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So I'm going to go ahead and dive into some of the questions I have. Can you start by defining what vaccine hesitancy is and all the groups that are typically encompassed in that term?
Sure. So taking a step back, I feel like in the last years, we've made unbelievable progress around the science of vaccines, producing vaccines that help prevent all kinds of diseases. But the real-world effectiveness of vaccines is really hampered by people not getting them. And you'll notice that I use language like people not getting them because I think there's an overemphasis on vaccine hesitancy or even anti-vaxxers. And everyone knows that anti-vaxxer they've heard mouth off on social media or maybe at their Thanksgiving table. But I think there is far less attention paid to people who just didn't get around to getting the vaccine. And that's an enormous problem that can be solved with some of what we've learned from behavioral science. So for example, 45% of adults do get a flu vaccine annually. That's really not largely hesitancy. That's a lot of people who don't know when they're due, and it sort of slips to the bottom of the list. And that's a problem that behavioral scientists are really interested in and think that they can solve.
You kind of started discussing the social media rhetoric around anti-vaxxers, but taking a step back and talking about kind of what behavioral scientists have seen over the past couple of years with the COVID pandemic, can you describe some of the vaccine hesitancy trends over the past few years and what some of the risks are associated with these trends?
You know, one of the things that I looked up right before our call, because I wanted to check my memory, and I was looking up, has the rate of flu vaccination. Because if I asked you to guess, do you think flu vaccination has gotten worse since COVID with the spike in sort of vaccine hesitancy? It's the same or better? I won't put you on the spot, but it's actually the same or slightly better than it was if you go back to 2010. And I think that speaks to this impression we have that COVID-19 has created enormous amounts of vaccine hesitancy. But in fact, I think the main problem still remains that most people don't know what they're due for, and they don't know when to get it, and they don't, as I say, cross paths with it really easily to get it at the right moment and the right time. I really admire what the CDC is doing today, which is really thinking in terms of how do we get public health done through trusted doctors, because that is people that people listen to. So my doctor, my local doctor is the person that people are most likely to listen to when it comes to information about what vaccine to get when. But not everybody gets to the doctor at the right time and in the right moment to get the vaccine that they're due for. And that presents a huge problem. One, you know, study showed that if every doctor did everything they need to for all of their patients to get all of their preventive care, not just vaccines, but preventive care, cancer screenings, everything, doctors would be working 27 hours a day, which isn't realistic. So how do we solve this problem? And how do we look at this and think about how do we help make sure that people are getting the vaccines that they need to at the right time? And we're particularly excited about that because we sit in this unique space where people are coming in to a clinician visit. We can give them the right message. We can target the right people with the right message at the right time. And then the most powerful thing is if they walk into their visit and say, I think I'm due for a flu vaccine, or I think I need a shingles vaccine, that's going to ensure that it gets done.
It makes a lot of sense that a person's individual doctor who they already have a relationship with would be the best person for helping them kind of know what's next and the most trusted person for them. So I think that that's a really great point to bring up. We discussed a little bit about some of the reasons people don't get the vaccines or people don't get to the doctors in time for the vaccine. But if you can just dig in a little bit more about the common reasons why you've heard people deny vaccines or just, you know, altogether skip them, not necessarily deny, but just not even get into the office.
Yeah. So I think, you know, as I said, and I sound like a broken record, the biggest reason that people don't get it is I didn't know about it. I didn't know I was due. I didn't know it was important. But what we often hear are these anti-vax stories, you know, about autism or other things that make people really worried. Understanding the risks of not getting a vaccine is a little hard to message so simply. And I think that's part of it too. There were two articles that came out this week, and they were great examples of messaging that could be really powerful in terms of helping people understand why they should get a vaccine. So one was an article about how among people who had had COVID, those who had been vaccinated versus those who hadn't been vaccinated, those who had not been vaccinated and had COVID were much more likely to have a later episode of heart disease and become very ill or even die. Okay, that was so complicated, what I just said to you. Did you like, A, you probably didn't read the article, B, it's not a simple message. And so I think that's the balance of that people are dealing with, is that the messaging of the risks and the benefits, the risk messaging is really scary to people. The benefit messaging is harder to really explain to people in these simple, concise ways.
You know, I have a science background, and sometimes even me, like reading a sentence or listening to you say that out loud is you know, it takes me a while to kind of connect the pieces together. So I can't imagine someone who's, you know, going into a doctor's office really doesn't have any other health conditions that require them to know a little bit more about healthcare and science, how they would listen to that and be like, tune out immediately in a couple of minutes. So that's an interesting.
I can do another one if you want another tune out one. There was another great article this week, RSV vaccination in hospitalized patients, that it showed that people who are hospitalized with RSV, there was an enormous evidence that they were dying of a sudden heart attack. And RSV vaccines are incredibly, they're new, they're powerful, they're incredibly effective, and people are not getting it out there as readily, that message.
I actually just read that article too.
Great.
Let's go ahead and move on a little bit and discuss, you know, with your area of expertise being psychology, how have certain psychological factors impacted vaccine hesitancy, and how will they continue to impact, you know, communities on a broader scale?
Yeah. So you referenced that article in the New England Journal of Medicine that we did. And one of the things we found in that article was everybody was talking about, oh my God, we've got this huge problem, vaccine hesitancy in patients with COVID-19 vaccination. But what we found is when people, the majority of people who had not been vaccinated, who are coming in to their doctor's visit, were not hesitant. They just hadn't gotten it yet. And if the vaccine had been there at the visit time, they would have gotten it. Compared to, you know, there was another group that was hesitant, but like just had some questions they need to resolve versus no way am I ever getting this. And so that was a really interesting finding. And I think it speaks to a lot of our healthcare decision making. So as a psychologist, the research that I'm really interested in is the folks that are thinking about what they call in behavioral science choice architecture. How do I make the ball roll downhill so I make it so easy for you that there's no resistance to you getting a vaccine? And so, for example, there's a group at Penn under Katie Milkman that looks at things like, how do we message to people? And they had a whole bunch of behavioral scientists try different messages. And the most effective one was saying, Veronica, when you come in for a visit or you go to a pharmacy, we've reserved a vaccine for you today. And that was what was really effective at getting people like, oh, you know, I have a table. It's like a reservation. People got, you know, were more likely to show up for their appointment, more likely to get the vaccine. It's things like that. What are we doing to make it really easy for people to get vaccines?
Yeah. And I think, you know, especially people who work or people have families, convenience is, sounds like it's a really important factor. They don't want to have to go out of their way again or go back to the doctor's office if they were just there to get a vaccine. So I think that that's kind of a critical conversation. I want to dive a little bit deeper and discuss how impacts might vary across different socioeconomic groups or marginalized communities, or if you've seen any of those differences, and if so, what they are.
That's a really important question. And again, I think that there's been this tremendous focus on specific vaccine myths or ideas about vaccines that are cropping up in subpopulations. And I'm not saying that those aren't true, that those things are happening. There are groups doing great work to counteract that kind of messaging. There was a group of Black doctors that did incredibly powerful messaging during the pandemic. But I think that sort of misses a less sexy problem, which is that in groups that are underserved and where they're disadvantages, I think what you see is that people have a really hard time accessing care for their basic healthcare needs. And so they're going to be much less likely to take a day off of work, to get to the doctor, to get a flu vaccine, or even get into a pharmacy. That's why, you know, pharmacists being able to give vaccines is so important, but having it in people's local communities, or things that people don't talk about, like, you know, undocumented populations that are really just concerned to go into any healthcare setting where they could be asked for their ID or asked any other information. And so these are things that really detract from our vaccine strategies that are just really impacting underserved populations, I think.
They definitely speak to a broader structural issue in healthcare, yeah, not just with vaccines, but with all kind of care methods. Throughout this conversation, we've discussed a lot about, you know, what the problems are. And I want to pivot a little bit as we close up our discussion and discuss how we can kind of combat issues of vaccine hesitancy or those people who are just not getting to an appointment, not getting to a doctor's office, not getting to a place where they can get their vaccines. And if you can kind of discuss it on the different levels, you know, how can providers support vaccination efforts, public health experts, government organizations, and then kind of how can all these communities work together to reach that kind of broader mission?
So I'll tie together a couple of threads that I talked about along the way. The trusted doctor is the best source of information, but the trusted doctor would be working 27 hours if they did all the work. So we need solutions that help amplify the voice of that individual doctor. And that's really consistent outreach campaigns that are coming from them. That's finding digital ways so that patients are reminded as they're coming in to a visit what they're due for, what the benefits of getting that vaccine that day, because there is nothing better than a patient walking into their trusted doctor and saying, hey, I think I need a shingles vaccine. And that's just not happening enough. And that's a lot of the work that we're trying to do that we're so excited about is just really how can we leverage that moment and have the right message targeted to the right person so that they'll bring it up with their provider. But broader than that, just getting messages out to people when they're due and really simple messages. Vaccine schedules really confusing for a patient to understand and just not something someone's going to focus on and make sure that they've got it on time, except for in the, you know, early pediatric years where someone's going into a doctor's visit so frequently.
Yeah. And I think even in those early pediatric years, I've seen those vaccine schedules, and if your doctor isn't very explicitly telling you when and why you need each vaccine, I can imagine that it gets confusing for parents. And then if you're off schedule for one, you may be off schedule for another. And it's just kind of this really long chain reaction.
It's worth mentioning the difference between required vaccines and not required vaccines, because, I mean, this is a big deal. When a parent hasn't done certain vaccines, isn't caught up, and they go to put their kid in school, they'll get go back and get it done. And and then it's a bigger effort to get an exemption. So the choice architecture goes in the reverse, right? And so a person's just more likely to do it. If they're in that category of didn't get around to it, they're going to get it done.
Awesome. Are there any specific digital health tools? You mentioned the way that certain things were worded, but is there anything that you've seen or crossed paths with that have been more effective at kind of encouraging people to get these, maybe the voluntary vaccinations or the optional ones?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I can just speak from the work that we do every day. We're sending out 30 million messages a year to encourage people to get vaccine. And the ones that are most effective are either outreach when they're not planning on coming out with compelling messaging about, you know, seasonal, it's the time now. The, you know, things that are sort of monthly campaigns are very helpful. But, you know, what we see is that 30% of people in that situation will say, okay, I'm more likely to talk to my doctor about it now, or more likely to get a flu shot or an HPV vaccine as a result of that. And it's just saving an enormous amount of time because, you know, you think about the outreach and then the person scheduling and all of those things that have to happen, the paperwork they have to sign to do that, just sort of making all of that seamless is really making a difference.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Hatch, for sitting down and having this discussion with me. I'm really excited for our listeners to kind of dig into this topic a little bit more. For our listeners, we would love to hear from you. Feel free to reach out with any healthcare related questions or subjects that you think we should cover by emailing me at bsalib@techtarget.com. And if you like this episode, please consider rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Thank you so much for listening.
This is a TechTarget production.